everybody. Welcome to the New in Chess podcast, where we talk to grandmasters, authors, trainers, and other personalities from the fascinating world of chess. The New in Chess podcast is brought to you by DGT, the leading producer of chess clocks and sensory chess boards. My name is Dirk-Jan ten Heusendam. Today's episode reaches you from Oslo, where the 14th edition of Norway Chess started earlier this week and is in full swing now. At the venue, the spectacular Deichman Library in the heart of the city, I ran into Simen Agdestein, Norway's strongest grandmaster before Magnus Carlsen and Magnus's first trainer. Simen is famous for his double career. He was not only the country's best chess player, he was also a gifted footballer who played on the national team of Norway on 8 occasions. Simen first appeared on the New in Chess podcast almost exactly 2 years ago, when we talked about the book that Atle Gröhn had written about his remarkable double career, a book entitled Games and Goals. When we met yesterday, Simen invited me to visit his school, the NTG, the Norwegian College of Elite Sports, where he has been teaching exceptional sports talents from 1998. I happily accepted the invitation and suggested that we combine the visit with a talk about Norway chess, Simen's school, chess in Norway, and chess in and football. As of late, these two have been more connected, it seems, than ever. Many famous footballers claim that their passion for chess helps them on the pitch, and Norway's biggest star, Erling Haaland, is one of the main investors in Norway chess's new venture, Total Chess, a new cycle of tournaments that will start with a pilot edition coming November, and then see a first Total Chess World Championship consisting of 4 tournaments worldwide next year. So here we are at Simen's school, actually in Simen's office, where there's lots of chess books, there's lots of cups and medals and lots of photos. I mean, some beautiful ones of Simen playing Spassky and whatnot. Simen, thank you for receiving me. How's life?
It's actually wonderful, I would say. It's far beyond any expectations or any dreams I could have thought of many years ago.
And in what sense is that?
Yeah, the interest in chess is so enormous in Norway. We have a world champion coming from our neighborhood.
Yeah.
And we have lots of kids playing chess. And I have a fantastic partner in Olga Dolshikova. And we're organizing lots of tournaments at schools around.
The two of you are running the chess department here.
Yeah, I have a partner. We've been partners since 2011, a Ukrainian female GM who came to Norway.
Yeah.
And we've been working together. So so I say that there are two geniuses. I've had about 150 students or something at my school. The two geniuses, Magnus is obviously one, and Olga Dolshikova is the other one.
When was Magnus at this school?
Well, we started working, well, not working, that's not the right word, training with Magnus when he was 9 years old. And when he was 15, he was old enough to start at the school on a regular basis. But we, of course, I've followed him closely from the beginning.
Yeah.
Obviously, he came just from the neighborhood here. So,
yeah, he was living close to the school.
He was living close to the school, just a few kilometers away from the school.
Yeah. And so when you started working here, well, he was not yet around, or you already knew him?
Yeah, I started in 1998 at the school here. I managed to get into this school.
Then he was 7 or 8 years old.
Yeah. And we basically started maybe a year or two after that. That was when he was discovered, to put it that way.
Yeah.
And his rating was 900. But the potential was obviously from day one.
Yeah.
So it was very simple to see that, well, I think I said to his father that he could become a GM before he was 14.
Uh-huh.
Which was a little bit of a mistake because he was only 13 when he became a GM.
Yes, but how quickly did you detect his talent? Did you thought, well, this is exceptional?
Yeah, I thought it was exceptional right from the beginning. But even if I hadn't been correct in that assessment, I think it's good to believe that it's possible, because then you break some barriers. And if you hadn't had that idea from the very beginning, maybe it wouldn't have realized itself. I have been visualizing Magnus becoming the best in the world from right from the beginning.
Yeah.
And it helps. It makes it more fun to work for everyone, and the barrier is kind of broken from a very early age.
But how do you do that without putting unreasonable pressure on a kid?
Yeah, I was thinking about that, because we wrote a book actually together, you and I, when he was only 13. We wrote a book on Magnus Wonderboy.
Yeah.
And I was a bit nervous, because what does that do with a little boy?
Yeah.
Having a book on him at such an early age. And I thought, first of all, the parents thought it was okay. Mm. That's the main thing. You have to get the parents with you on such a project.
Yeah.
And another thing was that I thought, considering the pressure he would get later on, maybe it's good to get used to such pressure already at a very young age. Mm-hmm. It was also a documentary on him called The Prince of Chess.
Yes.
Which is a bit stressful. Maybe having that title on a documentary, there was a film crew following us for two years.
Yeah, I remember them being in Libya.
Yes.
But then Prince of Chess is probably not as much possible, not as much pressure as King of Chess.
King of Chess, yes. But it's been a lot of pressure on him from the beginning, but maybe it has come natural, like the royals or something. I don't know, they get they must have enormous pressure, of course.
Yeah.
But maybe they get used to it when you get those pressure going on from a very early age. I don't know. Yeah. But
it's part of your talent to deal with pressure.
Yeah. And it's been an important part of the talent, very important one. Yeah. I remember when I came on the national soccer team, for instance, I wasn't prepared at all. And it didn't kind of it didn't destroy the pressure, suddenly having agents from Queen's Park following you and all kinds of pressure. And I wasn't prepared for that at all when I was 23.
Yeah.
I wish I had someone to tell me about those things. The earlier the better, because then you're perhaps better capable of taking taking such pressure and getting used to it and so on.
You mean you were totally taken by surprise when there suddenly was interest from foreign clubs? Like,
yes.
I think Besiktas, they wanted to sign you. Was it the Rangers?
Just for instance, someone, Queen's Park Rangers was watching me once, I remember. And then someone just whispered to me, "Psst, Queen's Park Rangers is here watching you."
Yeah.
And that destroyed my match. I never played so horrible my whole career. I was just thinking about that. I felt the pressure.
Uh-huh.
And also when I came on the national team of Norway, some of the newspapers were following everything I did, every kick on the ball and so on.
Yeah.
I felt the pressure. I even felt the pressure when the Chess Olympiad was in Tromsø in Norway in 2014.
Yeah.
And then I was almost 50 years old.
Yeah.
And still I got very stressed by just having the TV following me on a chess tournament. I wasn't used to that.
Yeah.
I used to go on chess tournaments on my own.
Yeah.
So I was not prepared for the pressure, and I hadn't got used to it. And maybe it would have been good to get used to such a thing, such an aspect of the game from an early age, because I had some ideas like that when I wrote that book. That maybe it's good to get used to the pressure at a very young age.
Yeah, for sure. But it's a general phenomenon. You can see that many strong players, they don't want to play critical or crucial matches in their own country. I think now with the World Championship match between Gukesh and Sindarov coming up, I'm not sure if Gokesh wants to play in India. I mean, it's an honor, but at the same time, it's crazy pressure.
In India, then you're talking pressure, for sure. And I'm numb too. It definitely cannot have been an advantage for him playing Magnus in Chennai at home ground with 100 million people watching or whatever it was.
And also what I remember, the Indian press, I mean, they were ruthless. I mean, if he lost a game, they would ask questions. I'd never heard those at press conferences before. Yeah. I mean, very, very critical. So.
Yeah. I've heard that about penalties, for instance. I've heard that the best coaches in soccer, many of them don't prepare for penalties. I think even Johan Cruyff said something like that, because it's impossible to get the same. It's a totally different thing. Taking penalties when you train and when you have when you play the final in the World Cup or something, the pressure is just so enormous.
You just realize only a couple of billion people are watching this.
And getting used to such things. Yeah. I didn't manage to get used to it as a soccer player because I injured my knee so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
As a chess player, I kind of got away with it because the interest in me wasn't so big at that time. So,
at the start it was considerable.
Yeah, but then I was so young. Then I didn't bother.
Uh-huh.
So maybe it's about being young and adaptable or something like that.
Well, you were saved social media.
Right.
Yeah,
I don't care about that at all. Now I don't really care about about anything actually. I've been taking part in some reality programs on TV and so on.
So when I mean you've been in the Norwegian version of Dancing with the Stars and some other programs. Do you follow social media then or?
No, I don't care at all. But I've realized now that to get into such programs, you should have lots of followers on the social media.
It helps because then
it's a kind of a triangle. The productions need social media to get publicity, and vice versa. They need them, and the press need them too.
Yeah.
So if you don't have many followers on social media, you won't get invited to these reality programs.
Yeah. So those things are less now for you.
Yeah. I've taken part in, Dancing with the Stars, as you mentioned. But just recently, I took part in another program. I walked around in the mountains for a couple of weeks.
Oh, well.
I did quite well.
What were you doing in the mountains?
Walking around, trying not to be kicked out. There were 14 participants, and we got kicked out one by one. And
how kicked out? I mean,
you have to go home. So you get voted out on different.
You had to do all kinds of tests, and then there are votes and.
Not only votes. Sometimes there are competitions and so on.
Uh-huh.
I did quite well. I went out by on some 50-50 thing.
Okay.
So.
You went out with your head high.
Yeah, and that was my main goal. Yeah. For most of the others, the goal was just to win.
Yeah.
My goal was just to get out of it with my head high, as you said.
Yeah. But so your general thoughts about Magnus? I mean, he plays such an enormous role in Norwegian chess. I mean, he has been very important for your school as well, I guess, that you believe his way of handling with pressure, that is one of his huge assets.
I think so, because the pressure obviously is enormous.
Yeah.
And it's a bit outspoken or not spoken. His body language gets very upset when he loses and so on.
Yeah.
But those things, at least I know TV loves it when he gets upset when he loses things. Yeah. But Magnus is fantastic for the publicity of chess.
Mm.
In Norway, but nothing comes without people like Olga and local people organizing tournaments and making something out of all that publicity.
Yeah.
So.
But at the same time, I feel that I'm on some sort of holy ground here in your office. I mean, just 15 minutes ago, you did a great impersonation of Magnus, how as a kid he would, come into the room trying not to create too much attention. And then he would just take out a book and drop on the couch here and start reading.
Yeah.
I mean, that it is special to imagine that it happened here and that was the beginning of such a tremendous career.
And especially since the sofa is very retro. It's probably from 1970 or something like that.
Yeah.
So Magnus was reading books constantly, is my impression. I think he still reads books.
Yeah.
And he read books from the beginning, from when he was 9 and 10 years old, in English.
Yeah.
So that's a huge asset, I think. Reading books, I think it's useful. I think it's especially these days when the opposite is playing online and doing things online.
Yeah,
you get something that you don't get that way, I think.
Yeah, well, you create your own world. That's what I would guess. And if you have talent to create your own world, that's a huge thing. Yeah. Instead of doing what everyone else does.
Yeah.
So but the well, this is part of a big institute that trains talented young sports people in all kinds of sports, and you are the head of the chess section. So the ambition is to create as many grandmasters as possible. How many grandmasters have you created over the years?
I wouldn't say I've created them, but there have been 12 grandmasters come from plus me, comes from my school, over a total of about 150 students, which is not so bad actually, and it's almost 10% of my students become grandmasters.
Yeah.
But
what is required to get in?
Well, I've been struggling just to get anyone in actually, but I have a quota of 5 students. And if I'm lucky, I will have 5 applicants. Many years I've only had maybe 2 applicants and so on. But the main, I take the best rating. Mm. Yeah. Those who have most rating get in, if there is a competition of the places.
Yeah.
But a certain minimum of grades, school grades.
Yeah. But they come for various reasons. I mean, they do not necessarily come to become a grandmaster.
Yeah, but most don't become grandmasters, obviously.
No, but they come with that ambition or not?
No, I don't think they do, actually. Yeah. But we're having a great time. So we go to tournaments together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a big, huge social aspect here.
Mm-hmm.
It's not only about becoming good in chess.
Uh-huh.
And we have a kind of an ecosystem. We have lots of tournaments and things going on for youngsters and kids.
Mm-hmm.
And we need a massive amount of trainers and organizers too.
Yeah.
So when you have 1,000 kids, courses for thousands of kids actually, and organize hundreds of tournaments at school,
yeah,
we need lots of people to work for us.
Yeah.
And we have to educate organizers and teachers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of an ecosystem. We try to catch people, youngsters or kids, as early as possible. We have to try to follow them up from they are 5 or even earlier.
Uh-huh.
And we try to get them into our evening courses. Mm-hmm. We organize things at schools, training camps and so on.
Yeah, that's what you do for prospective pupils. I mean, they may become pupils later on, and so there's all kinds of courses to get them, well, to make them familiar with the school.
And also because a huge deal of idealism here. You just want to make the youngsters play chess.
Mm-hmm.
It's as simple as that, even if they have no chance of becoming very good or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So you just want to spread the word, so to speak.
Yeah.
It was like that before Magnus. We did lots of things and thought we were doing a fantastic job of getting publicity on chess.
Yeah.
And now Magnus comes and everything we do is just a little drop compared to what he creates of publicity.
Yeah.
But still, it's something about having those training camps and opening doors, just organizing things. Nothing would come out of Magnus if there weren't people like Olga and others doing voluntarily work around in Norway.
Yes, but it's a special school, but at the same time, it's also a normal school. I mean, you get all the normal subjects as well, right?
Yeah. You can start studying at universities everywhere after the school. You have chess is considered a subject.
Yeah.
And you get grade in chess. Just as it counts just as much as your math grade when you apply for universities and so on.
It's just one of your subjects.
It's just one of the subjects.
Yeah.
And the good thing is that you get a grade that counts for every year. You get 3 chess grades after going here 3 years. Plus, I also give them grades in physical training, actually. So I give them personally 4 grades. That's... if you want to become a doctor or something, and you need good grades, that's also then that's also a reason for coming here, so to speak.
I mean, then even there, the chess grades will help.
Yeah, then the chess grade will help.
Yeah, and you also teach, besides chess, you're teaching history.
Yeah, at the moment I have only one history class, but I've been a teacher in history, religion, social science, English.
When did you get interested in that? I mean, you already had your chess and your football. That
actually, when I was about 22 or something, I thought I would become a chess player forever, and then I realized that was would be too boring for me or too lonely and things. So then I just started at university, and I eventually became a political scientist. I have a degree in political science.
Which you never used?
I never used it for anything.
Yeah.
I took my final degree in thesis on the transport sector in Southern Africa, which is not very relevant for anything. Yeah. But
okay, it's good to mention that if somebody is looking for an expert there.
But history... eventually, I took what I needed to teach, and you need some course. You have to do a kind of a 1 year study of history and so on to be allowed to teach in the subject.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've taken that up later on.
And that's what you enjoy a lot.
History and religion. I've been a history teacher for quite a few years now, so now I get a little bit tired of it, actually. But religion is kind of more fun, because then you can discuss and have more fun with the students and ask what they think. And it's a little bit easier to activate the students than in religion. It's not only religion, it's about ethics.
Have discussions about that more than about historical.
Well, you have to, because that's with me as a teacher. Well, we discuss. But
that's a fun challenge.
Yeah, that's a fun. It's all kinds of things that you can discuss in religion.
Yeah.
And ethics and philosophy is also part of that subject.
What is your favorite philosophical question?
Moral, for instance. Moral is a very essential part of the subject. So what is a good moral? So then you have utilitarianism and things like the Kant and so on.
Okay.
The philosophers, starting with Aristotle and good deeds and so on.
That's what you do. You take a subject and then you look what the main philosophers have said about that.
There are always different aspects on situations, and that's fun. What is a good deed? What is a good act? And according to philosophers, according to religion, and so on, different aspects.
Yeah.
Is it okay to cheat at school, for instance? And why not? And so on.
Okay. And then you have students who say that it's a good plan?
No, it's not good to cheat at school. But if you see your friend cheat at school, for instance, should you tell the teacher about it or not?
That's a difficult question.
It's a tricky one.
Okay, we are almost making a natural link to chess.
Yeah, right.
I mean, should you tell about chess cheating if you see it? Well,
yes, things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Your best friend cheat. Should you tell? What to do then?
Yeah.
Things like that.
You love chess. Why don't you try New in Chess? With readers in 116 countries, New in Chess is the premier chess magazine in the world. What will you get? Exciting chess games explained by the best experts in a clear and accessible way, on-the-spot reports of the biggest events, top-notch instruction, independent journalism, chess history that comes to life, and great interviews. New in Chess, the way you want it. The beautifully produced paper edition or the digital edition for phone, tablet or PC. Give it a try. Go to our website newinchess.com/magazine for more information about subscriptions and special offers.
Well, let's turn to real-time chess. Norway Chess has started. This year it is in Oslo, not in Stavanger, where it has been held for the first 13 years. The venue is pretty spectacular. It's the Deichman Library in the heart of Oslo. It's a huge building, very modern, and a very busy place. I mean, it's an enormous amount of students and elderly people. I mean, everyone coming there and reading and studying. It's very impressive. And then right in the middle, there's this huge playing venue now for Norway Chess. There's a huge part which is exclusively for the international broadcast. It looks spectacular. I mean, could you ever have imagined a thing like that in Oslo?
Yeah, that's absolutely fantastic. I'm so glad I moved it. It was fantastic in Stavanger too. They organized the tournaments for, I don't know, 15 years or something in Stavanger. And now they moved to Oslo, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's closer. It's great for me. But I think it's great for many others too. You get it, and especially having it there.
Mm-hmm.
Because this absolutely new library is supposed to be for everyone.
Yeah.
And people use it.
Yeah.
School kids go there to do homework. You can make podcasts there. You can make music there. And it's a people's place. And there, you can even have a super chess tournament, which is quite fabulous, I would say. And it's nice to show, of course, nice to show Oslo the chess players, but also the other way, it's nice to show Oslo around. I'm an Oslo guide, actually, a tourist guide, an authorized tourist guide.
Mm.
So I'm an Oslo fanatic, actually, even.
Yeah.
So I'm very happy just to show Oslo to the people and all the chess players that come here.
Yeah, and all the historical aspects of the city.
Yes.
Yeah.
And also lots of other things going on, side tournaments happening, especially this Good Night pub. This chess pub.
Yeah, which is also very much in the center. And it's a chess pub.
It's a chess pub just close by. And they're organizing things all the time in this couple of weeks here.
Yeah, I think that's
taking
three
maximum advantage of all the attention that's going on, and that's absolutely great.
Yeah, I mean, when there's no Norway chess going on, do you occasionally go there to the?
Yes, chess players go there too, but most of the people that are there are just ordinary people who just play chess. They follow the chess at TV and so on.
Yeah.
I heard that there are 1.5 million users on chess.com, Norwegian players on chess.com.
Oh, wow.
1.5 million out of a population of less than 6 million.
Mm.
So the interest in chess is enormous.
Yeah.
But most of these are absolutely amateurs and will never take part in a organized chess tournament.
Yeah.
But the chess pub managed to, they come to the chess pub and take part in those amateur tournaments without being rated, those are not rated and so on.
Yeah.
And that's good.
I thought that was amazing the first time I went there. Then I was looking at the games and it was clear that many of the guests there, they were very weak players.
Yes, but
they were simply enjoying it like I'm enjoying a game of Monopoly or whatever.
Right.
And it was very much a social place.
Yeah. And that's the thing, Magnus generates enormous interest. But it doesn't necessarily generate good youngsters.
Mm-hmm.
There, again, you have to have those local ideal guys who just work for nothing year after year.
Yeah.
And without them, nothing will happen.
But it is a commercial enterprise, the pub.
And that's a commercial enterprise for sure. But that's good. If it's sustainable, that's just good. Excellent.
Yeah. Well, we were talking about Magnussen Prescher. He is the star of why he's always been the star of Norway chess. I mean, Norway chess would not have existed without him. There is, again, a lot of pressure on him here. It feels like these days he's so much more relaxed compared to not that long ago. How would you explain that? I mean, even now, the start in his tournament wasn't too great.
Yeah.
But still, he looks pretty relaxed.
Yeah, I think he's so happy having a good wife and a child.
Yeah.
So I think he's kind of a family guy at the bottom there.
Yeah.
I think that's been very good for him, personally.
Does that surprise you? Because, I mean, if you remember that kid who loved to read in isolation on the couch?
Or? No, Magnus has always been social. When he was 15, he used to go to super tournaments with a friend, not a super GM as a second or something.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
The social aspect has always been important for Magnus, I think.
Yeah.
And I think his family has been important for him.
Yeah, very much relying on his family, right?
Yeah. So I think that's at the bottom there. He's a family guy, and now he's got his own family. He's 36 soon, 36, and he's got he's well established with a house near Oslo.
Yeah.
Near the school, actually. It's just a few kilometers away from the school again.
Uh-huh.
So I hope it's not by accident. I think maybe he feels connected to the school. I'm not sure.
This school.
Yeah, it's close to this school, the school I work at, NTG.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the danger maybe is that if you shall become very good at something, you have to think that it's extremely important.
Mm.
Maybe less chess is not so important for him any longer. And I had the same feeling when I got kids a long time ago.
Yeah.
And that was very healthy for your mind, but maybe not for the chess.
He still looks pretty ambitious. But I mean, he may begin to see some relative value of certain things.
And, yeah. Yeah. And now he's had a couple of losses.
Yeah.
He's got away with those losses. Most chess players lose more often than he does. So and that's a horrible feeling. So now suddenly he can feel how it's like being an ordinary chess player, and it's not always fun. It's fun when you win, but losing is horrible.
But then the system at Norway Chess, always leaves hope, because you can score 3 points with a full win, and he's done that before, that he started winning towards the end, and then you can really catch up and even overtake others who slow down. Winning a game here really comes at a premium.
Yeah, it's been like that all the time, that he loses now and then, and then he's at his most dangerous, and makes some miraculous saves again and again, and he's done that through his whole career.
Yeah.
Just a few weeks ago, when he started not that brilliant in the tournament in Sweden, and he won the last three games, and he won the tiebreak and still won the tournament.
Yeah, which looked very unlikely after he had lost the game in such a short tournament.
And it's been like that through his whole career, actually. Lots of situations with enormous pressure, and his miracles has happened over and over again.
Yeah.
So, but can it continue like that?
Yeah.
At some point, people suddenly realize that he's human, and maybe the miracle things... it's not. I think it happens something with his opponents too, when they see that he also is human and actually make big mistakes and so on.
Yeah, and the new generation is extremely ambitious.
Yeah.
It's like the tournament in Sweden when he, decided to take part there. Then immediately someone like Abdusatorov, he said, okay, doesn't matter how much money you offer. I want to play because I want to have the chance to play Magnus.
That's very cool. That's very cool.
I mean, they're after him. And that's great.
Yeah.
So, it's... we will see how the tournament will develop. It's in any case, it looks like it's a success in the center of Oslo, and the format, it helps. I mean, it's a spectacular format where you have no increments for the first 40 moves, which creates crazy time scrambles, and then you have very little time left for the remaining moves, and then if that's not enough excitement, you get the Armageddon in case of a draw.
Yeah,
it is one of those wishes to be innovative that have made Norway chess special in my eyes, and now they want to take it further. With Norway chess has developed this idea of total chess, which is a mix of fast, classical, and rapid and blitz, which will be held next year. That cycle. How promising do you think that is?
I think it is promising because at least in Norway, whenever Magnus plays anything, TV covers it.
Yeah.
But it's a bit boring covering games that last 5 hours and so on.
Yeah.
So everything that goes fast is easier to cover, and when it's coverage on it, and sponsors probably come, and. So at least in Norway, it's a huge potential as long as Magnus is doing as well as he normally do in these rapid things.
Yeah, it's not a big secret that they created this format hoping to keep Magnus in the game.
Exactly, they're adjusting to Magnus. This is perfect for him.
Mm.
And not necessarily perfect for everyone. But some worry that you lose the classical aspect of the game, and you don't get so many kind of classical. There are lots of classics in chess. You have the Carpo games, the Capablanca games, and so on that will last forever.
Yeah,
and you don't get those games so often with these rapid things.
No.
And then it's just there and then, and it's very exciting when both players have only 10 seconds per move or 1 second per move. And then they make huge mistakes, which might be fun to watch there and then.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a bit sad for the quality, of course, with these big mistakes that happen.
Yeah. Well, you might expect that. The way it's being broadcast, it's pretty impressive. I mean, it's live on Norwegian television, and then there are two international broadcasts, so it reaches an incredible number of people. And in the end, they may decide to play classical anyway. So it, in a way, you feel that it is promotion for chess in a very strong manner. If you attract that number of spectators.
Mm. Yeah, we've been used to thinking that all publicity is good publicity.
Mm.
So you get publicity this way, which supposedly is good.
Yeah.
And my concern at the moment is I'm more focused on trying to help young players. And my focus is on people definitely under 18.
Yeah.
So I don't really care so much about details on that level, but as long as it produces publicity, I'm kind of happy.
Yeah. Well, indirectly, your school also profits from the fact that chess is a well-known game now in Norway.
Yes, it does, absolutely. But I think, again, that it profits more of all the work that Olga has been doing the last 15 years with the tournaments, non-stop tournaments every month, training camps.
Well, maybe you should mention yourself as well.
And all those things that we do every day and every week, year after year.
Yeah.
I think that matters more, actually, for for producing relevant students to my school.
Sure.
That's kind of the peak. We want everyone at the top here, and hopefully they will become grandmasters when they come to my school when they are 15 and 16 and leave three years later.
Yeah, but it's easier to do that while chess is popular
than when
you're doing it in a void.
And maybe it's easier to get the parents
willing
to send their youngsters and let them spend so much time on this, I wouldn't say silly game, but this game.
Yeah. Well, I think another success of Norway Chess, the organizers, was that they attracted lots of investors for the Total Chess cycle, and one of them, actually two of them, really caught the eye, and that was Erling Haaland, the footballer who decided to invest, and then also Johannes Klebo. I don't know if I pronounced that correctly.
That's fine.
The cross-country skier.
Yes.
And that makes a huge difference if people of that fame show their interest in chess.
Yeah. I think it's Kjell Madland, the organizer of Norway Chess. He's been incredibly clever. It's not only Magnus making those things happen. It's a fantastic, clever Kjell Madland, the organizer, being incredibly creative and making so much out of Magnus. So he deserves maybe all the, not all, because Magnus is there, but he is the main guy of Norway Chess. One person is just absolutely dedicated to making fantastic things.
Yeah. Well, let's say that is absolutely true. I mean, it's pretty impressive what he's been doing over the years. I mean, fine tuning the tournament year by year and coming up with these new concepts. You've been asked often about football and chess, obviously, because you were very good at both. Now we have Erling Haaland, who not only invests in chess, but he also speaks very positively about chess, that it's a great game. And he's not the only footballer, because there's many of them these days. I mean, we've seen Eberechi Eze, who was playing chess with Levi Rosman, which attracted a lot of attention. Well, he was also playing with Magnus, by the way. And then, at the moment, you read a lot of profiles on Mo Salah, Liverpool player, who was leaving Liverpool, a legend. And then one of the things he used to prepare mentally for his games was playing chess. Is there some connection between chess and football or that can be useful?
Maybe it is, because my students too, they're not good at football at all, many of them.
Yeah.
But still, they love playing soccer.
Yeah.
So when we do physical training once a week, it has to be soccer.
Uh-huh.
So it's not, So maybe there is some connection there. I didn't think about it that when I was young and played both.
You never saw a connection.
I just played both because I've done it since I was very little.
Yeah.
And I love playing soccer and I love playing chess. And people often ask if there are connections and similarities and so on. I really didn't know. I didn't think so much about it. I think I answer different things every time I was asked the question.
So you have to make up some new answer this
because
time.
I got tired of what I said earlier or something like that.
Yeah.
But
on the other hand, I mean, football has become a much more strategic game these days.
Yeah, it has.
If you read about concepts that they work on, I mean, they are very, very detailed. And for instance, a coach like Pep Guardiola.
Yeah.
Who was seen as one of the best, or maybe the best coaches ever. Mm. He was a friend of Garry Kasparov's, and I think on the first pages of his autobiography, he speaks about a meeting with Kasparov and his interest in his chess.
Yeah.
So it is something that it's a returning aspect.
Yeah, I met a retired chess professional, soccer professional. He said just that chess. Football has become like chess these days,
uh-huh,
because the technique is so fantastic that It wasn't like that before.
Yeah, I mean the personal technique of the football players, yes, is such that you can tell them what to do. And
yeah,
you can. Yeah,
and it's similar. Pep Guardiola was in Oslo recently, by the way. Yeah. I was actually called, since I'm an Oslo guy, that they thought maybe I could guide him. That would be a good idea.
Oh yeah, that would have been great.
And then I was busy, so I couldn't take the phone. I just saw the message, and I called back instantly, of course.
Yeah.
But that was so late. Then he had got some. Then he had sent him to some other guide.
Guide. Yeah.
Uh-huh. So that irritated me quite a bit, because that would have been fun guiding Pep Guardiola around in Oslo.
Yeah.
I would have appreciated that.
So what would you have talked about? Would you?
That would be an experience that irritated me a lot for some weeks afterwards. I didn't get that opportunity.
No, because you're very eager to speak about the history of Oslo, but then you might be interested in asking him some questions.
Just meeting
as well.
A guy like Pep Guardiola would be fantastic. Just like he even contacts Gary Kasparov. And of course, it would be interesting just to hear how is he?
Yeah.
Fantastic trainer.
Yeah.
How is he as a person? You just read about him and so on.
Yeah.
So he obviously have qualities that makes him such a great trainer.
Yeah. And we know that Magnus, that he's an enormous football fan and with tremendous knowledge.
I think he is a sport fanatic. I think he has knowledge of absolutely everything, all kinds of sport.
Yeah.
And he has photographic memory too. So
he was particularly good at this fantasy football.
Yes, football, but other things too. Yes.
Still, yeah. I mean, when he was a kid and he was here at school, then he also was keen on playing football, wasn't he?
Oh yes, he was quite good. He was quite good. Among the best. So he's good at different kinds of sports.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mean it's
skiing. I think he even did some ski jumping at a very young age.
Okay. So it's mainly an interest in physical activity. So.
Yeah, part of playing and having fun.
Yeah.
Which is, he just loves to have fun in general, and soccer and playing and golf. I think I've started playing a lot of golf lately, for instance.
Yeah, well, that's always the question, if golf can be fun, because people get so addicted to it. I have no idea. Do you play golf?
No, I don't. I haven't discovered the attraction yet.
Okay. So you still have time for your chess school and...
I'm capable of being totally addicted to some things.
Hmm.
So I'm a little bit careful about things that can... Mm-hmm. Take up my attention, chess once did.
Yeah, you might fall in love with golf, and there goes the rest of your life.
Right, things like that.
This podcast is brought to you by DGT, the chess innovators. At DGT, we want to bring people together and help them grow through play by supporting chess and creating innovative, high-quality products for players everywhere. To find your nearest DGT dealer, please visit our website at dgt.nl.
So what are your ambitions at the moment, Simon?
The thing is that it's a good question, because I find it hard to have any ambitions these days, because all ambitions I had has been achieved times 10.
Mm.
I had lots of things that I dreamed of in chess-wise, but all this thing has come true and so much more.
Yeah.
So everything coming now is just kind of dessert and just incredible things happening.
Yeah.
But... now I have more more ambitions, like being more better at reading books and such things.
Mm.
And
have you become more philosophical?
Not philosophical, but I'm still curious on everything.
No, no. I mean, more philosophical about your attitude towards life.
And not really. I'm not so philosophical in general, I would say. But my main goal is to sleep well, and that's about it, I would say.
Well, that's actually, that sounds like a very good philosophy to me.
Yeah.
I mean, some very famous Greek philosopher could have said that.
Okay, that is just luck.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's actually...
It's what I tell people when they say, how can I improve in chess? Then I say, well, just try to sleep well.
Yeah, but yeah. I try not to play chess. That's kind of one of my ambitions, actually. Uh-huh. But I often fail because I go with my students and win to tournaments and so on.
Yeah.
And if I don't play that tournament, I would have a great time.
Yeah.
Just hanging around and look at their games and see them sweat and so on. But suddenly, sometimes I just say, okay, why not play? And then I almost always regret it. Unless I win the tournament, then that happens still occasionally. But
is it because once you sit down to play, well, a serious game, that it...
Because I very often lose, and then I kind of discover my brain is not working, and that's a very bad feeling. Because when I lose, it's so very often, I don't so often get outplayed. When I lose, it's just very often because I make some incredibly stupid blunder or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be very irritating.
Yeah.
And just a reminder that the brain is not working as good any longer.
Mm.
And I don't like that feeling at all.
Yeah.
So,
and in fact, when you sit down to play, you hope that it's still working perfectly, because if it does, then that gives you a great feeling.
Yeah, then everything is normal. But still, it's a creative challenge. You have to create something, and then I find it hard just to play, just to reproduce openings you played before, for instance. I think that's boring. You have to discover new things all the time.
Yeah,
and that's and then I play much worse if I play my proper openings.
Yeah.
It's more boring,
but
when I do, I get more points by playing things I know. But that's a bit boring.
Yeah, but that has always been your wish to find new things and not to repeat things. Is that something which is great in teaching, that you're forced to stay in touch with new developments? And
that's the thing also when I teach, yes. For instance, now I've been a history teacher for a few years.
Yeah.
I kind of got tired of it. I need new things. I need a new topic. I need something I don't really know.
Yeah.
So, it's almost like I just want to learn new things. So that's an ambition goal for me.
It's a real shame that you couldn't have this walk with Guardiola, because, well, he has to choose a new ambition now.
Yes.
And everyone is wondering what will his next step be.
Yeah.
That would have been a great thing to discuss with him.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
But I have three kids. I kind of live my life through my three kids.
Yeah.
And the thing is that they are realizing their goals and more than like a dream of two. So things are going so well. My eldest son is going to marry in a few weeks.
Uh-huh.
And then they are healthy and well. They are doing fine, making good educations, doing what they want. And things are going just so incredibly well.
Yeah.
But occasionally you get reminded that you're not here forever. Suddenly someone dies or some accident happens and so on. That happens too. That's part of it, of course.
Yeah, sure. So, let's say on this philosophical note, who's going to win Norway Chess? I mean, three rounds have been played as we talk now, and I think it's totally impossible to answer this question. So let me ask you.
Yeah, if Magnus wins again, then it's another miracle. I don't think that would be incredible after this start, after three rounds. Firusha, I think it's cool if he wins, because I'm not sure. I think he had some weak tournament not long ago, and then it just shows that everything is possible. It goes up and down.
Yeah.
And since he sits there with his stitches, having broken his leg or something.
Well, it's some ankle injury.
Yeah. Which is cool. Ever creative. They're all creative, these guys here. If some of those creative guys wins, I'm supportive.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. But I have a feeling it will be some Asian guy. Not Magnus, not Vincent, I think.
You think Prako or Gukesh?
I would bet on Firouzshahi, but just because he's won, he started so well.
But he's from, well, these days he's from France.
He's from France. Well,
I'm not sure about his
French. Did you get away from where you come from like that?
I don't know how good his French is, but...
He represents France.
Yeah, well, he doesn't. I mean, I think he does. He hasn't played a lot for the national team. He looks like the hot guy at the moment.
He comes from Iran and is just coming from Iran and becoming so good, I think is fascinating.
Well, there's several of them there, right?
Yeah, and the chess interest there is huge, I've understood.
Yeah.
So and it's been for a while. And it wasn't so long ago that chess was prohibited, if I've understood correctly. Yeah. Under Khomeini.
So
regime.
That they had a difficult time, but I mean, probably it's not for nothing that he's living abroad now.
Yeah.
So, let's see. Well, he has good chances to win, particularly I think with this injury. Because it must be difficult for his opponents as well to play against him, maybe more than the other way around.
Yeah, like Tony Miles became legendary a long time ago in the 70s when he won a tournament.
In Tilburg, yes. And I think that mainly upset his opponents.
Yeah.
So it may be an advantage. So.
Yeah, he was laying on a massage bench or something.
Yeah. I think... Ali Reza's coach already joked to him, next time you break the other leg. So,
right.
Good. So, thank you very much for having me here at your school, Simon. It's a beautiful school. And this room with all the cups and all the memorabilia creates a very special atmosphere. It must be great to work here.
Yeah, thanks. It's been an honor.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the New in Chess podcast. The New in Chess podcast can be listened to on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and the New in Chess website. To leave a comment, go to our socials or email us directly at podcast@newinchess.com. If you're interested in Atle Green's book on Simon Achterstein, Games and Goals, or in another fine chess book, or if you would like to subscribe to the wonderful New in Chess magazine, please visit our website, newinchess.com. We thank our sponsor, the CGT, for their support and hope to have you back for the next episode of the New in Chess podcast.